not bad. Welcome back to the Reflex Blue Show.
I'm happy to be here. We have all kinds of people in the room with us today. By the way, sorry, it's totally my radio voice.
Yeah.
That's going to happen in about
a
half hour.
We got to thank AIG Nebraska.
We should.
For bringing by today's guest.
Yeah. And in fact, AIG Nebraska, pseudo president, proper president.
Interim.
Jim Wolf in the room, but microphoneless. He's just
that's rude, dude. That is cruel.
No, I think it was a special request, actually.
Oh, okay.
I think it's about as polite as we can be. So thanks to AIJ Nebraska for hooking us up with today's special guest, Ellen Lupton. Ellen, how are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you?
We're super stoked to have you here. And in fact, many of our audience members are already really excited about that, too.
Yeah, Ellen Lupton, and we'll read
this
right from her official bio because we like our plagiarism. Is curator of contemporary design at Cooper Hewitt National Design Museum in New York City and director of the graphic design MFA program at Maryland Institute College of Art, MICA, in Baltimore. And author of numerous books and articles on design, she is a public-minded critic, frequent lecturer, and AIGA gold medalist.
Do they give out silver medals?
Hell no, only
okay,
the gold.
Okay, so you really, it's...
It's first place or loser.
Right, yes. And all of the rest of us have lost. I was going to say, is a gold medal recipient or winner? But I was thinking champion might actually be the best word. How are you doing? How's your trip to Omaha so far? You're giving a lecture, I believe.
Yeah, so I'm doing a talk tonight with AIGA Nebraska. Some kind of breakfast gig in the morning.
That's right, you are doing.
It'll be a lot of fun. See who comes out at 7:30 in the morning.
Wow, starting early.
Hardcore.
Yeah. I don't know if you know that Ellen parties really crazily at night, so it's going to be difficult for everyone involved in that morning. I don't know. I'm just making that up. I don't have any facts to support that, so I'm just trying to start mad rumors. Donovan, you look like you want to take this away.
Sure. Actually, we did put out a call for a Twitter, and you're on Twitter. Twitter is Ellen Lupton.
Right? Yes. Uh-huh.
Oh, my goodness. I was just on Twitter. Is that all one word, Ellen Lupton?
Yep.
Lupton.
I don't even follow you. I feel terrible.
And we did get a comment from Robert Barney, who's up from in Boise.
Sure.
Right? He says, thank you for thinking with type. It was a foundation of my design education, making Ellen a design hero of mine.
You know, I think that is a very nice lead-in for exactly the very first thing I want to talk about that I think everyone I know would disown a friendship with me if we don't talk about thinking with type today.
All right.
And he's down to a few friends. It's
yeah, I know.
It's
well,
pretty dicey,
come on, man. I have many friends that want to hear
as
about
as long as you
type.
Have more fonts than friends, it's okay.
Oh, all right. I like that very much.
Unless you're Vignelli, and then you only start with five fonts.
Okay. Okay.
Right, but he only has four friends.
There you go.
I don't know where to go with Vignelli jokes. We didn't study him
in
college.
Well,
I'm sorry.
Go ahead and ask your question.
Well, I just Thinking with Type is it was released in 2004 for our listeners, and debatably, let me just say one of easily the most influential books about typography that's ever been produced, and I've read it. I recommend it to 100% of my students all the time. I don't
cool.
even teach typography.
Thank you. At the time, you know, I considered myself to be the next generation. And when I was in school, I said, when I grow up, I'm going to do my own type book. And it's going to be called Thinking with Type, not Designing with Type.
Well, I think that's a better starting point right there. So, but
and then, you know, some 20 years later, I actually did it.
Nice. It's a really, one of the things about Thinking with Type that I think is so instrumental in its success is its tone. It's not, well, I wouldn't say that Bringhurst's book is like reading microwave instructions, but it's pretty dry. I mean, the information's all there, but Thinking with Type is enjoyable to read. It's a good time.
Well, I love to read Bringhurst. I mean, to me, it's very poetic. It's very in-depth. It's philosophical. He knows
very
about the history of music and how it relates to typefaces. It's amazing. But I find that for a lot of my students, it's slow going.
Right. Educationally, yeah, that's a trickier book to put in front of students.
Yeah, it's very, it kind of assumes that the ultimate goal of typography is book design.
Hmm.
And that's not, okay, you know, necessarily where our students' heads are at.
Certainly not my students.
No. Yeah, they're thinking about posters, websites, magazines. And so Robert Bringhurst's book is really about text type and the printed page, the classical book.
Right, right.
And so I want my book to be more diverse in terms of kind of commercial application.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. And if memory serves, dinosaur rock posters,
yeah,
doing various things,
mm-hmm,
that always goes over well. Like, Mr. Boss, what's going on with this? It's Ellen Lupton. That's, she puts it in there. I'm not sure which more questions I want. I just want to know behind the scenes.
Well, let me tell you another thing about Thinking with Type. In July, a new edition is coming out.
Get out of town. Very timely,
yes.
Tell me all about it.
Well, this 48 new pages of content, dozens of new illustrations and examples.
So, specifically, when you went back to say, okay, it's time to do a new edition, what did you specifically want to address? Like, what is the new content?
Well, you know, I use Thinking with Type in the classroom, and I think, mm-hmm, that's a big use of the book. And I felt that there was a lot of things in the book that were so squeezed for space, mm-hmm, that it was hard for me to find them. And I wrote the book.
Okay.
So stuff like small caps, or the difference between old-style numerals and lining numerals, that kind of stuff was like, it was a tiny fraction of one page. And to me, that's like one of the most important things when you get you turn on the light bulb in a young designer's head.
Yeah, and they say,
lowercase numerals.
Yeah.
Right? That's kind of crazy. And that's how they start thinking about typography as a craft. Yeah. So the new book has more about that. It just has more, 2004, that's what, 6 years ago?
Yeah,
I put on a little weight since then, and so is my book.
That's pretty good. That's a pretty good time span in between. I think you mentioned when the light turns on. I think for me it was ligatures back in my original typography class. I was like, wait a minute, is that a real thing? And then I would go and I would look for books, and then some of them wouldn't have it, and I'd be like, well, whatever. And then I'd open a National Geographic, and they would have proper type. Like, man, I'll tell you what, back in the day, National Geographic knew how to set type.
Right.
I haven't checked for a while, but that was the one where it's like, wow, it's all really in here. And then just blew up. Donovan, what about you? You've been so quiet over there.
Well, I want to ask her about something else here. How long have you been writing for Fast Company?
I started writing for Fast Company last year.
Okay.
And I wrote a bunch of pieces. Kind of got lazy since then, but hope to get back to it.
You've got a specific topic in mind. I have to ask this question because you're Ellen Lupton and you're here. Fast Company's logo type. Sandwiching O's into C's. What is your official stance on that?
Oh, getting her in trouble with an employer. I don't know if it's in trouble.
Like, maybe she loves it.
I don't mind it. I feel like it's sort of, neo-70s kind of.
It is.
Funky.
Okay, I can see that.
It works well handled.
The CO is like company, commercial. There's a reason for it. The tiny A in Fast is maybe not so successful.
But
it's sort of Neo-Lou Ballin,
The normal abbreviation CO for. Okay, I'm on board now.
All right, well, she has an article. It's Time and Identity, What Your Clocks Say About Your Personality. Now, you can view these on the screen of your iPod or your viewer in iTunes or whatever to see these, but I've got four clocks in my office alone.
You're going to share photos of your many clocks.
So what do my four clocks say about my personality? The cat one does not work. The record is a Superman album that I made myself.
The soundtrack to Superman, I believe.
No, it's just a radio storing of a Superman story.
Oh, Superman Sings.
I couldn't take out my soundtrack.
His little known disco album.
Yeah.
Do you have an interpretation of Donovan Beery's life based upon the clocks that he has put in front of you?
The dude's got a lot of clocks, that's for sure.
This is just the office. I got a lot more at home.
Yeah, well, it's clocks are a nice thing to collect, actually. And I like all your collections. You know, anytime you have density in one area, you learn a lot. Well, and we have this very modernist clock to my left, this red clock that just has hands and no numbers. And that's, your kind of 0-degree clock for people that don't, they're so in tune to the time, they don't need the numbers, right?
That might explain why we put it in the room where we never look at it.
I don't like that kind of clock.
Is that over here?
Yeah, that's above the Street Fighter machine. You don't want to know what time it is because you got to quit playing.
You should just take it down because it can be like a casino.
Maybe.
Although you should open it up to take quarters. I feel like I'm getting us off track.
But of course, that's from a design philosophy of reducing things to their minimum. You know, so it goes with a certain point of view. I see like your watch has circles and triangles instead of numbers.
And Velcro.
All right. So at least it has some markings for where the numbers would be. But I used to drive my daughter crazy in second grade. She was trying to learn to tell time, and we had all these clocks with no numbers.
Oh,
it was like such a bummer, you know?
The level of difficulty there, but, you know.
Yeah.
Challenge helps people grow, I think.
Right. For me, it's very important to have a wristwatch with giant numbers on it so that I can discreetly check what time it is. You know, I know a lot of young people only use their cell phone for a watch, but then they've got to, like, click it on or open it up.
I do it, too.
So it's very obvious when you're talking to someone, suddenly they're checking their phone
to
see what time it is.
You don't get to be all sly.
I don't dig that at all.
Oh, I'm just scratching my wrist over here. I'm not trying to get away from you.
I would really like to live in a city where everyone went around, like, Flavor Flav with, like, a giant clock on their chest.
You know what?
And then you could look like you're talking to somebody and just see the time.
I was going to say, if everyone did it, that would work. But otherwise, it's an upside-down clock. Do you hang it upside down so the 12 is closest to your chin?
No,
I'm
you
sorry,
look at
so
someone else's.
The 6 is?
Yeah, no.
Anyway, so there's clocks. Now, this I'm gonna let this lead us into, from one object, let's say, into many. Your latest book, which is still your latest book, right? 2009's Designing Your Life?
Yeah, it's one of my latest books, yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, are there more that I'm unaware of?
I have a book that just came out called Designing with Materials.
Oh,
Exploring
goodness.
Materials. Exploring Materials.
Let's talk.
Which
let's
is
talk
an industrial design
first.
Book. Well, it's a book I did with a colleague at MICA where I teach, and it's about how product designers can use materials to inspire their work. So instead of getting into, you know, sketching or 3D software, making blobs, you know, abstractly on the computer, if you let the materials that you're using guide your design process, it creates different results. So we have this great book about that, and it's organized around different materials with examples of how they behave. And
can you give me an example where that's been really successful for a company or a designer? I'm thinking of the aluminum iMacs or MacBooks right now.
Yeah, that's definitely an exploration of the material and how to make the most of it.
Yeah.
Well, there's like people working with paper, for example. Like Molo is a company that makes expandable temporary walls out of paper. So imagine like those, you know, party decorations, the wedding bells and stuff.
Oh, sure. Yeah. They ship flat and then you expand them, I guess. What do you call that? Just flip them open and then they make a bell?
Yeah. So people have experimented with that kind of engineering of paper in order to create very lightweight structures more at an architectural scale.
That sounds pretty... I like the idea of walls built out of that because I think that would give you the best shot of doing your Wile E. Coyote run through.
Yeah, I'm thinking
yeah,
dressing like a Kool-Aid Man.
Yeah, just knock it out, right. Yeah.
Or Kool-Aid Man, even better. Although you kind of need bricks for Kool-Aid Man.
You do.
I think that's true. So, okay, and that's just come out.
Yeah.
And then we also have... We have Design Your Life.
Right, that came out in May 2009.
What's our subtitle on Design Your Life here, Donovan Berry? I want to get you involved in this show.
The pleasures
here.
And perils of everyday things.
Tell us about this one. And apparently this is where we're supposed to tell people to buy bras.
Everybody, even you guys, should have
that,
one.
I'm definitely. Fine with that. I have no problems buying bras.
Well, this is a book I did with my twin sister, Julia Lupton. And it's a book about how design influences everything that we do in our life. And it's really meant not for professional designers, but for everybody.
Right. Well, I think that's a really underrated topic that most people don't. I mean, I think anyone in any kind of design field runs into people who don't realize that how much design affects them.
Yeah, and there's a lot of books that are written from a business point of view, you know, how design thinking can make your company more innovative. And, of course, there's tons of decorating books and craft books. Mm-hmm. But there's not much to just get you thinking about design in your atmosphere and how it works for you and how it doesn't. So it's very eclectic. It looks at everything from porches and living rooms to bras and how you set up your dinner table and stuff like that. So it's very, it's practical, but it's also philosophical and a little bit funny and off color at times.
Cool. So what was the original idea? What was your inspiration for pulling that book together?
Well, we did a book together for kids called DIY Kids.
Right. That was,
we did that with our children.
Yep.
And, it, you know, we think it's, you know, it's never too early to talk to your child about typography.
I second that.
You know, yeah.
Got to just get kids on in early.
Yeah.
So we had fun doing that book and we decided.
They'll be, you know, smoking cigarettes and using Comic Sans.
Or papyrus.
Time, like 5, yeah.
Worse. Yeah.
Bad news. Is there cigarette packaging in papyrus? I'll bet there is. I'll bet we could find it. Okay, so sorry. So we were just talking about you had done the book with your sister and your kids.
Yep.
And so what happened after that?
Well, we decided to do this book that's really for us. Kind of a book for working moms, you know? And so it's about, you know, your living room and your bra and your toaster, stuff like that, but it's irreverent. It's not like Real Simple magazine. It's
right. That's
more
good.
Humorous.
That's good. We get a lot of Real Simple.
Is this something that you could give to a non-designer that would kind of explain to them
absolutely
a little bit about what we do?
Yeah.
Okay.
Good. All right. Was there anything? And I have to apologize because I haven't actually seen the book and I don't know what its real makeup is. A lot of research in that. Do you have a copy, Jim? Jim's gonna go score us a copy.
It'd be fantastic.
Look at the lightning speed. This is happening in real time.
Well, do you want to know how to buy a bra?
You know what?
He does.
I do.
Nate really does.
I mean, at this point, it's come up so many times. Let's talk about it. I'm gonna walk into a store and buy a bra. What do I do?
All right. Well, here's the thing. The way bras are sized. Mm-hmm. Is they have a cup size and they have a band size.
Yes.
And
two very important
right?
Measurements.
So if you know anybody that wears a bra. So the band
I've heard
size
of people who wear them.
It's the dimension of your chest underneath the boobs. And the cup size is the relates to the size of your breasts. Okay.
Right.
And apparently 80% of American women are wearing the wrong size. And they're making consistently the same mistake. They're buying a bra that has a cup that's too small. That's where you get that like double boob effect.
Sure. Yes.
Not cool, but somehow women want to deny that they need more room in there.
Okay.
Be surprised. Okay. And they're wearing a band that's too big.
Okay, so it's kind of like they're compensating for one by making the other too big or
it doesn't fit. And what happens is that the band rides up in the back and then it comes down in the front, which is not the desired effect.
No.
So if a lady goes to a really good lingerie shop, they will measure you and the expert salespeople in these shops can actually look at you and know what size you are.
No, they're like the people at the circus where they say, you know, they'll guess your weight within 5 pounds.
Sure.
Only these women are right.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And what's cool is almost like...
Yeah, you don't get a prize if they're
and
off.
You got to buy a pretty expensive bra, but what's cool is that then you've got, like, your prescription, and then you can go online and finally buy bras that actually fit.
This is the one I'm going to get. I'm a big fan of the Bauhaus bras here, especially the square. I don't know that that's going to get you comfort, but it's certainly going to be a hit at
parties.
This
is in page 67 of the new book.
Yeah, I love the illustrations in these. This is wonderful.
Yeah, thank you. I did the illustrations. That was
did
a lot
you?
Of fun.
These are super fun and accomplished, I could say.
Well, thank
you. I like them quite a bit. Chocolate Fountain, The Scream in a Christmas Ball. Love it. This is available now. Run out, get it, buy it for... You know what? I'm going to recommend buy it for your mom. Or is Father's Day, has that gone by yet?
No, that's coming up.
Maybe get it for your dad so that he can, you know, learn how to buy bras for your mom. We there can do go. That.
It's two gifts in one.
Yeah. It's all kinds. It's like teaching a man to fish.
Right.
You'll be buying bras for life. And then you just told us just off mic that you have another book that you're working on right now?
Yeah, I've done a series of books with my graduate students at MICA, and we put together these books as a team, and they actually get published. Some of them have been very successful. We did a book in 2006 called DIY, Design It Yourself.
Yep.
It was actually a class project with grad students, and the students create all the content, all the visual examples. They do the writing. We design the book, photography, everything. So we're doing a new one that's going to come out next spring, and it's called Graphic Design Thinking, How to Define Problems, Get Ideas, and Create Form. And it's a guide to all the tricks and techniques that designers use to do their work.
So like getting into visual vocabulary and...
It's everything from brainstorming and focus groups, that kind of stuff, where you're working on defining what a problem is, to the how do you get the aha moment. We've got great techniques from that. We talk to designers. We try things in the classroom. How do you get like a concept once you know what you're trying to say? And then techniques for kind of liberating your formal vocabulary, working with materials, working with, you know, photography to go 3D to 2D, creating kind of time-based exercises to get you out of your rut, that kind of stuff. So it's a really, really cool book that is all about how designers think.
That's great. And is that geared for like younger designers and emerging designers? That sounds super great.
Mm-hmm.
Jim, question for you. Who was the last great conceptual graphic designer?
Paul Rand. Done. I'm going to say Paul Rand. It's always Paul Rand is always the right answer.
Or Rand Paul.
Yeah, there you go.
Or yeah, that's been messing up my headlines. What's Paul Rand doing in the
between
headlines?
Rand Paul going, and the Enron logo? That Paul less, Rand's less legacy is just going.
Here, you're talking over Jim. Let's get you on mic.
My answer is Ladislav Sutnar.
Okay.
Correct answer, I guess. Done.
Fair enough. I think we're kind of. I feel like we're winding down here.
All right.
Yeah.
Ellen, is there anything else we can gab about? Are you going to any conferences soon? Are you doing any more speaking engagements? Can we build up your profile for you? Would you like us to promote you? I feel like you could use a hand with that. I'm just kidding.
I'm good.
Okay.
All right. Well, we'll be back next week. We'll start to broadcast from the How Conference.
Jeez, that's next week already.
Register now, howconference.com.
Can they still register at this point?
I think. I don't know.
At this point, don't register. Just show up in Denver and crash the party. We will be there.
We're not promoting that.
We will be there for all three How conferences, the in-house conference, the Creative Freelancer conference, and the How conference proper, broadcasting every day in semi-live fashion, as well as recording a whole bunch more interviews. So please check us out on 36point.com. Donovan, thanks for showing up to work today.
All right. Thanks to AIG Nebraska once again, and thank you so much, Ellen.
Thank you, Ellen.
My pleasure. Nice to be here with your clocks.
And and thanks to Donovan's clocks for being here as well.
Three of the four work. That should count for something.
That's pretty good. I've always wondered why that one doesn't work.
I plugged it in. It worked for about 6 hours, and it broke. And it's actually like from the 40s, so to get it repaired around here was difficult.
Yeah. That's problematic.
Beautiful. So it's just permanently set to 11:19.
No, at least... Oh, sure. So we've got content. I feel like we can go out on that. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you next week.